In Iowa, we're not dealing with a hurricane or a superstorm, but it is time to start thinking about the season ahead. Today, how to get your home ready for winter. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. We'll talk about what you need to do to winterize your home, from the simple, clean the gutters, to the complex. We'll talk about insulation and how to get the most out of your furnace. Also, if you're faced with a major problem, like needing a new furnace, Bill will give you some advice on how to get the most for your money. Of course, you can also join us with your questions about your home. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. While the eastern third of the country is soaking wet, or at least knee-deep in snow, our sunny, mild weather here in Iowa feels pretty good, but winter is coming. And today we're going to talk about what you need to do to get your home ready for the winter. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. Hello, Bill.
Hey, good morning, Charity. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for being here today.
You bet. And
it does feel awfully nice to be in Iowa where the sun is shining.
It's perfect out today.
It is. So let's talk about getting ready for winter. And let's start with some of the simple stuff, Bill. And of course, I think the place that everybody needs to start, you've told me before, is with the gutters, right?
Right, right. In fact, that's something I think when we're done today, I'm going to have to go out. I kind of walked around the outside of the house this morning to kind of see what my to-do list is, and I've noticed that, you know, in my area here, almost all the leaves are down, but and the leaves have kind of blown away since we've had such, you know, such dry weather. It's not like they usually are pasted all over the roof, and but now it's just a lot of those little stick remnants that get stuck in the gutters, get stuck in the shingles and in the valleys, and now is a perfect time to do it because the you can pull them down, clean the gutters out. They're not near as full of wet debris as usual, but pull that all off now while we've got this kind of lull in bad weather. So the other thing too is, like we always say, is just double check and make sure that the gutters and downspouts are in great shape. They're attached correctly. Make sure that the screws or fasteners that are used are actually in some solid wood. Kind of maybe tug on them a little bit to make sure everything's all right. And run some water through the gutters and downspouts and make sure it's free flowing. But to kind of go with that is, some of us have our gutters and downspouts connected to a long drainage line that maybe will go to, the back of the yard. It may, just kind of free flow into a ravine or something. And now is really a good time to put some like hardware cloth, a mesh, wire mesh, about that has maybe squares of 3/8 of an inch or so the water can flow out. But yet critters can't crawl back in and, make a nest in there or pass away in there and then bloat and then, no water gets out. But, do the same thing with your sump pump lines. If they are running out into your yard, put a small mesh across that to keep the animals that are, looking to, crawl in there for the winter.
So when you were walking around your house this morning, other than the gutters, what were you looking for?
Well, mine isn't anything like you'd find on a Bob Vila list. So, what I was really looking for were things that maybe are a little bit different that a lot of people don't look at is, one of the things I looked at was if a person, let's say, has their bathroom vent fan or their range hood vent fan go out a sidewall. So you would see, especially when it's cool, you'd see warm air coming out a vent. If it comes out a sidewall and you have your overhang or your soffit right up above it, what you want to do is cover that soffit either. Have a soffit and siding person come over or a carpenter come over. What you want to do is if it's ventilated soffit, which means you can, there's holes that go up into the attic for ventilation, you want to cover those up for about 6 feet left and right of where that warm air comes out of the wall, because what happens is when that, let's say you're ventilating after a shower or bath, that warm, moist air goes out the wall, and it'll quickly climb. And if you've got a good attic ventilation system, if the soffit or overhang is ventilated, it'll pull that warm, moist air right up into the attic where you don't want it. That's why you're trying to vent it out. And then you can cause, premature roof decking failure, or your insulation is wet, and then you start getting mold and rot up in there. So that's something fairly new that, you know, it's been pretty obvious if you really think about it. But that's one of the things that, luckily, I don't have it on my house in that situation, but we've seen a lot of houses that do. So that'd be the, you know, one of the things I'd look at. And then one of the other things, been working on some projects around Iowa, is making sure that your decks are fastened with the right fasteners. And this, you know, this may seem, you would think they would always be connected correctly, but if you have a treated wood deck that's been put on in the last few years, they changed the type of treatment process in the treated wood, you know, the green treated lumber, and there are specific fasteners, you know, like nails and the hangers and all the brackets involved with building a deck. They're specifically designed for that type of new treated lumber because it's highly corrosive to certain fasteners. And so I would really, if I could, get underneath that deck and then see if any of the nails are starting to come out or the brackets are loose. And, you know, maybe even, if you can, try maybe pull one out or pull two out just to see what kind of condition they're in. Because just this last week I saw some nails that normally would be about an eighth of an inch in diameter, and I couldn't believe it. I pulled them out, and they're about the same width as if you take your ballpoint pen and draw across a piece of paper. They're that thin. I mean,
Wow. It's
like a heavy grade needle, and so they don't have any holding power. So it's something to look at, especially if you spend a lot of time on your deck, and if you're going to have snow loads or a lot of moisture loads. That's something I think that is kind of a newer topic we really need to start looking at.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that at all. That's uplifting, Bill.
Yeah, here you go. Yeah.
Some
of our windows, our casement windows, the windows that go, you know, they go out left or right, you know, they don't go straight up and down like a double hung or single hung. I open those up and give them a complete cleaning, because if you open up them now, you know, they're full of dead Asian beetles or box elder bugs. You know, get all that junk out of there, because the weather stripping is not going to seal good when it has all that decaying matter, you know, wedged between the weather strip and the window.
Sure.
And then run your fingers around the top of that window sash, because when windows are put in new, a lot of times there's a little spacer block that kind of holds them in place while they're being shipped. And it's surprising how many are left in place when the house goes up. Run your hand around the top and the bottom, and you may feel a little plastic or a wooden kind of a block. Get rid of that. And if that wood has not ever been, with polyurethane or treated, and it still may be brand new bare wood, you need to get that taken care of. And you may find there's a few brands of windows that are having some premature failures. So I would open those windows up, and the bottom board on the window sash, kind of wiggle it and run your fingers underneath it, and see if it feels soft to you. Maybe try to poke it a little bit with maybe a key to see if the wood is soft. And if that's the case, I'd get a hold of the window manufacturer to start thinking about some possible replacement or repairs when spring comes around, and it would take you this whole winter to get all that stuff lined up.
All right. Well, let's move inside.
Okay.
And of course, I know, again, furnace filter is a great thing to start with. But before it gets too cold, it's also a good idea to think about finding where air is coming into your home, right?
You bet. You know, there's a lot of ways to do that. You can, do it at, a lot of people will do it at night. They will shut all the lights off in the lower level or inside the house, and then walk around the outside with a flashlight and look around windows and look around doors and where the house meets your foundation. And if you're outside shining a light in, a lot of times you can see that light, and you know that even if you see like a little glow, if it isn't a beam, you'll see a little glow. Well, maybe there's not quite enough, you know, air sealing being done in that particular place. So, you know, that's one good way. Some people use like theatrical smoke, which is kind of hard to do, but usually
but
just
it's cooler. You know, just,
what was that?
But it's cooler.
Yeah, it's a lot neater, especially if you get the color. And you do it tonight or tomorrow night for Halloween. Yeah, you can. You know, that would be kind of fun. Show all your air leaks. You know, it looks like your house is perforated with bullet holes or something. I don't know. All the smoke be coming out. But, you know, really, a lot of times, some people have these little sound meters. You can get them at Radio Shack for, like, I think I bought one for, like, $16 that you can have a radio or TV playing inside the house, and you walk around the outside, and a decibel meter will catch where there's you know, some leaks, which is kind of a cool way to do it too. But you know, we really do need to stop air. But we really got to think about, you know, if we're stopping air, what's going to happen with the air that was always leaking or the cool dry air coming in? You know, we have to really look at our indoor air quality, our humidity, and making sure that our bathroom vent fans are up and working. You know, we always talk about furnaces and stuff, but we want to make sure that those bath fans and our ventilation fans are doing the best they possibly can. This may be a good time to upgrade those fans, because sometimes the original fan may be a real, just a real wiener. I mean, this thing's not moving any air. It might, you know, it's real loud, but hardly moves any air. You know, try to maybe find your electrician or your plumber and or heating person to put in a new one, to upgrade it to a low sound, which is just a quieter fan to lower the numbers, they're rated in sounds.
So you want to make sure that your house is tight but not too tight. You want to make sure that you're still getting fresh air in, right?
Yeah, when we build a house, we try to make it as possibly as airtight as possible. And then you come back and you control your ventilation, because then, you know, if you looked at how much you were actually venting out, it'd probably be the leakiest house in the neighborhood. It's just that we're taking stale air out, bringing, you know, clean, filtered, fresh air in. But getting rid of those excess humidity, because we've seen some people that had beautiful homes, and then they throw a humidifier in the winter because they think their house is too dry, which it may be, but they just throw this unit in, and all of a sudden there's all this moisture inside the walls. And I mean, it's a professional. That's what's scary sometimes for builders, is the house is operating great, and then you hand the keys over to the homeowner. It'd be the same thing as giving it to me, you know. Okay, now you know, everything's off the table. Now we don't know how the house is going to be operated.
All right, well, we're going to take a break here. I'm talking with our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. We're talking about winterizing your home, some of the steps that you need to take before the weather turns cold in Iowa. And, of course, Bill is here to answer your questions as well about winterizing your home, about your furnace, your storm windows, your ventilation system, or about any project you're working on at home. Give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Home Improvement Day today on Talk of Iowa. And while we're watching the news and looking at people all along the East Coast dealing with all kinds of horrible things this morning, it's a beautiful day in Iowa, but we do need to think about the months ahead. We're talking about winterizing our homes today, and Bill McAnally is here to answer your questions. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And first up, Todd is on the line from Iowa City. Hi, Todd.
Hello. Good
Hi.
Morning.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call, Bill and Charity. I had a couple questions. My wife and I bought a house that's from the year 1900, and I had a couple questions about that. I just kind of made storm windows for a lot of the windows. We have 44 windows in the place,
and
only four of them are modern. But my question is that I put some insulation, like the foam insulation that you can like cut. It's very thin. It's like used around windows and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Put around all these storm windows, and upstairs in the home getting a lot of moisture on windows, on those storm windows on the interior side. And essentially we'll put up some plastic too in the next few days to have another zone of buffer between the air leakage from the inside of the house.
Sure.
I'm wondering if I should be concerned about that. It's not too significant, probably about 5 windows, but it's quite a bit of moisture. We noticed it last year, too.
Did you have the plastic up last year on the inside?
Yes, we did, and that helped.
Yeah.
But last year there were quite a few storms that I didn't have a chance to get made, but now they're all up.
Okay. Yeah, in that type of a house, you know, what may be happening is, you know, the windows can only do so much with the relative humidity you may have in your air. And, you know, adding that extra layer of the plastic, you know, when people look at it, they think, boy, that looks kind of cheesy, you know, but actually they work pretty well. I mean, they actually do work pretty well. I mean, doing your own storms is great, and then when you add that extra layer, it helps, you know, another layer of dead air. But you're always going to, you know, especially that age of house, it's hard to distribute air and move air around to maybe, you know, wash across the face of that film.
Yeah.
You know, since it's an older home, a lot of times, you know, if the foundation's leaky, the cold air drops in the basement, and then it pushes the warmer air, helps push the warmer air up, and if you have a lot of humidity, you still may get some condensation on all of them, which, you know, in some cases, honestly, it's having a little bit of moisture just kind of shows that it's maybe a little bit healthier, because when it does get a little, it gets real dry and you have no moisture, then it may not be the healthiest for you, because it's so dry in the house, your sinuses are cracking, and you know, or the, you know, you're picking up things that, you know, coughs and all that. You know, if you can move the air around a little bit more, maybe leave the doors open, make sure that heavy drapes don't cover, you know, the windows, especially at nighttime, and and you know, try kind of creative, maybe moving the air around a little bit more. But what you're doing for that age of house is a really good idea.
Okay, I had one follow-up question, if I may.
Sure.
We have insulation upstairs in a walk-in attic that's about 95% cellulose and 5% vermiculite.
Okay.
And the depth of the insulation is about 4 inches on the cellulose. The vermiculite I'm not touching. I've already got it tested.
Good.
But for that cellulose, I'm thinking about putting some R13 about on top of that.
Okay.
And there should be enough head space above the joists and stuff to accomplish that. What would I gain from doing that?
Well, you may gain a little bit of energy efficiency, but in some cases it may be the worst thing you can do, because what you have to do is stop the air from getting into the attic from below first, which, since there's vermiculite there, you know, I don't like it either, so... this may be a case where you would have a professional come in and air seal everything first. You know, they would deal with the vermiculite and be geared up correctly in that. Because I've run into the same thing before. I've added more insulation. You're thinking, hey, this, you know, this has got to help. And then all of a sudden now you've got frost on your roof deck, you know, that you never had before. It's because now you've stopped enough of the heat energy from coming up that your roof deck gets cooler, but yet you still have air leaks coming through where there's wires in these old houses and the wall intersections and things, and then the walk-in, you know, access, that the warm air gets in there and then it condenses, and you cause something that's a lot worse than what you started with, trying to save energy. So you've got to stop that warm air from getting into the attic by, you know, maybe sealing, you know, the attic access, you know, with weather stripping and upgrading that. There's a lot of... there's a lot of information on the internet on how to you know, make your attic space more usable and more airtight.
Right.
You know, it's you know, I don't. In right as I got on the air here, you know, you mentioned. I remember one of the sponsors is DPO Construction there in that area, and Don Otto is a really good resource for everything that we're talking about today on energy efficiency. This guy's an expert. He's a brainiac. I mean, he really analyzes things, and he's also, you know, a person you could get a hold of too.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate that resource, and thank you, Charity, so much for having the program today.
No problem. Thanks a lot for your call, Todd.
You bet. All right. Cheers.
Bye-bye. Next up,
hey,
let's
I
go
like
to
that.
Let's go to Dave on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Dave.
Hey, good morning.
What's your question?
I also have a window question. Older house, you know, 1915, and the double hungs were replaced throughout the house before we bought it. And some of the windows get moisture in between the two panes, which then just kind of molds and mildews over. And
right.
I'm trying to find out if that's something that I could attempt to repair myself, or do I need to hire somebody to replace it, or do I need to replace those windows?
Well, it kind of depends on the style. You can have those sashes redone, which,
okay,
you know, may be cheaper. You know, I know it's going to be cheaper than replacing your, you know, the whole window unit. How old do you think those double hungs are now, the ones that are the newer ones?
They were put in. We've lived in the house 9 years. The people before us owned it for 5 years, and it was during that five-year period that they replaced the windows.
Okay. You know, any window manufacturer will tell you that after, you know, with that many years, if they're, you know, the seal has gone out on them because they've had so many freeze-thaw cycles, and if some of them did have, like, say, argon gas in between, you know, a lot of that is already gone. If you can find the window manufacturer, I don't know if it's a major one or local, you can get with the manufacturer and find out if they have facilities that will rebuild those for you. It's something new that some of the companies are starting to do, that they're actually offering a service where you can, you know, send in your sashes and they will rebuild those rather than the window replacements, because the competition's getting so tight.
So it's definitely something I should not attempt myself.
Well, kind of looking at them, I mean, you could try it. You can go ahead and, seal that inside surface, maybe with, a silicone around that glaze, the glazing onto the sash itself. You can try that and see how it works. And, you know, you may be lucky enough that it will, but, you know, you still may be getting enough coming in between the panes somewhere else. And I know some people have gone around the actual sash and sealed it with, you know, like two or three coats of polyurethane, and that actually worked, because it kind of sealed so the air couldn't get in and out between the two panes.
So maybe do that with the windows that don't have any problems showing yet. But
Yeah. I mean, it's something
they need to come apart to be cleaned.
Yeah, you know, it'd be nice to, you know, try a couple things and see if it works for you, and that'd be less expensive and do it yourself.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Dave. And next up, we'll go to Seamus on the line in Dubuque at 866-780-9100. Hi, Seamus.
Hi. Actually, I had a question about latex versus alkyd-based exterior paints. But when I was listening to your last callers, now I think I have more of a question about my windows. So,
you can ask them both, all right?
Well, I like the windows one better, though.
What's that?
Bill likes
the windows.
Windows
one better.
Right.
Okay, I'll go with windows then.
I don't want to get pushed in the nose if I give the wrong answer on the paint.
There are a lot of we bought our house. It's an old restored schoolhouse, and it's a stone build from 1850, and it's been renovated. And it's actually a lot of the exterior wood they went through renovated in. You know, they try to use like epoxy-based compounds to fill and seal. And what I'm looking at doing is actually rebuilding the entire window structures myself. But I'd like to use a type of wood that's, pine is so common around here, and I just don't think, based on like a lot of the sapwoods that we use now rather than heartwood, I'm just looking for a good exterior wood to use, like something that's either got a heavy grain density, or I'm not sure exactly where to go.
Well, you know, that's a really good question, because if it was me, I'd be looking for a resource to buy that, the older actual woods that are very dense, you know, like a yellow pine or something, or longleaf pine. There are some sources. I think it's called Timeless Timbers up in Minnesota,
Oh, okay.
Superior, Wisconsin. I think they have it. You know, I know some have used, they've gone to teak. I don't know how stable that would be for a window. But, you know, there's access for that wood. And, you know, you're not really talking a lot of board feet when you're doing a window. I mean, that's the good thing. It's not like you're doing a whole floor or something.
And that's true. And I guess my second question would be what species would be best just based on that, which would be something I could source locally, because I had a couple of suppliers tell me, like, African mahogany and things like that. And I'm thinking,
sure.
Yeah, that's kind of I don't want to go global. I'd rather stay in my backyard.
Yeah, well, you know what I would do then is I would go to the United States Forest Products Laboratory. Their site is in Madison, Wisconsin, at the university. And they have the information there, and you can actually contact. This person's name is Bob Falk, F-A-L-K. And
awesome.
this guy knows more about wood than you'd ever, you know, ever imagine. They're a government-run facility, and they can tell you exactly what kind of wood you would use for your specific application. They may even say, okay, if it's west-facing, you may want to use this species. If it's east-facing, if it's in the shade more, you know, if it's in sun all the time. They've done so many tests, and they're, you know, it's a good resource, and it's free to use.
Excellent.
U.S. Forest Products Laboratory.
Well, I'll let somebody else have a chance to ask you about some more window questions, probably. So,
okay.
Right, well, come, he'll be prepared for the paint question next time. So,
thank you very much.
The paint ones are always, you know, it's easy for you to pick on me when I'm up here.
Oh, it is. I pick on you when you're here too, Bill. Come on.
Yeah.
I'm an equal opportunity picker. Okay. You can join our conversation with your question at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, on the line today. Rudy is up next from Des Moines. Hi, Rudy.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, I've got a couple of them, or a few of them, I should say. I've bought this house in Beaverdale back in 2001. It's built in 1939. I had new siding put on. I had all new windows put on. And then over the years, I had a new furnace put in and a new air conditioning put in. And it's a two-story, but yet I still have to put a window air conditioner upstairs for one. And in the wintertime, you know, I'm thinking about putting sheets over the windows because it still gets a little cold up there. And I've also had my vents, and that's my biggest problem. I had my vents clean, but I'm still getting a lot of dust, mostly upstairs in one room, basically, the master bedroom. Ooh. And I can't figure out what's causing this. And the heat, it's like a forced heat, you know, and it doesn't get that warm upstairs.
Well, when they put the new furnace in, did they put any new ductwork in, or did they just kind of plug the furnace into the old ductwork?
Plug the furnace into the old ductwork.
There you go. Because you've made significant improvements on the home, which changes the whole dynamics of the house. And, you know, I don't know what you have for, you know, how it was, you know, air sealed and what's, you know, how your attic may be air sealed. But, you know, every furnace has a different fan system, and so then the ductwork has to be designed that every room should be roughly the same temperature. You know, that's why they have the International Energy Code requires that when you get a building permit now for new homes that you do these manual JDs and S. All they mean is that you have to design that furnace to push this amount of air to that room so that temperature, like say that cold temperature room you have now, it should be, you know, within a couple degrees of any other room in the house.
Check that out. I'll have to get a thermostat or some sort to check that out then to find out if they are equal, the other rooms.
Right. Or you can get a hold of a heating ventilation person that has gone through it's called the SAVE program. It was some training sponsored. It's a systems analysis and verification of efficiency, which SAVE stands for. I would get with somebody that's gone through that training, and they'd be able to help you, especially they'd check your ducts and see, if one room's being starved. Now, for one getting dust more than another, it kind of leads me to think something's leaking somewhere and pulling dust from someplace.
Well, that's what my thought was, too. And I thought that when I had a company come out, and I had them clean all my ducts out. They went to every coal register, pull it off, and then put their equipment up there and clean those ducts out. And I thought that would solve the problem for the dust.
Yeah.
But there it goes. As soon as the fan is on, the ceiling fan on, all of a sudden there's dust particles on the blades. And I go, what is going on here? And we've been struggling with it for the last... This is a Beaverdale brick house.
Okay.
And it's pretty well sealed, and that's why I can't figure out where this is coming from.
Well, that's it. You're going to have to get somebody in there with some analysis equipment, maybe a blower door, to find out, because, they cleaned they've cleaned everything, but they weren't able to, and that's not their job either, they weren't able to find the source of where this dust is coming from. I was in a home that had a big dust problem, and, it was kind of gross, but I just reached down and, ran my finger through the dust and then smelled it. It was kind of like out of Caddyshack movie or something, and it smelled like, those little pieces of fabric softener stuff you put into dryers and that.
Oh, interesting. Bill, we have to take a break. We'll get back in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Home Improvement Day today on Talk of Iowa. Bill McAnally is here with me. And Bill, I'm so glad you got to finish that sentence before we went to the break.
Oh.
But did you want to add something to that point about looking for dust?
Yeah, Smarty. Yeah, I do. What ended up being was the pressures inside the building was pulling air from the dryer vent duct, which wasn't sealed correctly, and it was pulling the dust from the dryer vent and putting that all over the house. And that's where that ended up coming from.
Well, like I said, I'm glad you did get to finish the sentence. When you just said Caddyshack, I thought, oh, no.
Yeah.
We've got to let him go on. All right. You can give us a call and ask your questions of Bill at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And here is an email from Matthew. He says, I was wondering if putting plexiglass around the inside windows of my house is a good insulation idea. I figure I would just screw them onto the trim around the window. What are your thoughts?
Well, if you're going for looks, it isn't the best, but it'll work. Anything will work, but it is expensive. I mean, doggone, plexiglass is a lot higher price than glass. And the only thing too is, in certain areas, plexiglass isn't the best because of possibility of breakage, around close to doors, and if it's close to the floor, the always that glass has to be tempered. So, in some cases it depends on the thickness, but you can trim it out, make it look good, and seal it. You can try that. I wouldn't consider that a long term, but it may work for you. Every situation is a little bit different.
Well, and it also could compromise the resale value of your home, couldn't it?
It seriously would. I mean, that's why I said that the looks, because the thing is, you're going to have holes to patch, and if it's something that is anything that has any historical value whatsoever, you would not want to do that.
So we've talked a lot about insulation today, or a little bit.
Sure.
About insulation today. What do you need to look at? If you go up into your attic, how do you know if you have enough insulation up there?
Well, for Iowa, if you have, let's just throw a number out. If you've got a foot of insulation, you're pretty close. But it depends. You're not up to energy code standards. You can have 2 feet of insulation up there, but it all comes down to the air sealing. And if there's a lot of leaks and holes that get into the attic, let's just say an older home, and you can walk up there through a set of stairs and just go up in the attic. I mean, there's this huge hole from the main house letting warm, moist air up in the attic, and it doesn't really matter what kind of insulation you have, you're going to have condensation issues. The other thing is especially these older homes, they had a it was called the knob and tube wiring, where there's a couple of black wires about a quarter inch in diameter, and they run through these little porcelain tubes through the ceiling joists and rafters and that. Insulation cannot come in contact with that. The electrical code officials for the state of Iowa are really pushing education on that, that any insulation that you install has to be kept away from that in walls or in attics. So you have to build some sort of an enclosure to protect all those wires from the insulation falling on top of it. So, you know, the best thing to do is air seal that attic first. Then that insulation works.
Is there a point in the year where it's too late for this year? I mean, No,
actually, for me, I mean, I don't like being in warm attics. I'd rather it be about 35 degrees in that attic, and that's just perfect because there's no wind moving around, you know, in there. So if you're working hard, 35, 40 degrees, you know, sometimes you're down to your T-shirt even when it's that cold. But, you know, the thing that the other caller, you know, he brought up vermiculite, and there's a lot of it in Iowa's older homes. And that vermiculite, almost all of it in Iowa, can be traced back to Minneapolis and then back out to the western states. I think it was Montana where they mined it. And this is just full of asbestos. And vermiculite, you know, looks like little cubes, gray cubes, and then you can hold them up, and they kind of have like a mica substance on them that might be reflective a little bit. If you have that in your attic, do not touch it. That's something for a professional to handle. You do not want to disturb it. You don't want any dust of it. You don't want it getting into your house. And I hope the other gentleman that called about dust in his house, I'm hoping that, you know, his system isn't, you know, have a negative pressure inside your house, which is meaning he's pulling air from through the walls and from the ceiling. And I'm hoping he's not pulling vermiculite dust into his house. I mean, that's another thing that the houses right. are so, the dynamics on a home can be changed so easy. And a lot of us don't realize it.
Let's get back to the phones. Paul is on the line from Correctionville. Hi, Paul.
Good morning. Thanks morning. For taking my call. I really appreciate your show. I have a question. You're talking about getting ready for winter, and I certainly am doing that. I'm down to the wire. I took it on to build a little cottage for my retired brother this fall, and I've got what I think is a pretty square and true structure put up, and I'm ready to go indoors. And I was wondering if Iowa code allows for the homeowner to do the electrical and then have it inspected.
It is. You can do it as long as, you know, the electrical inspector watches out for you. And you do have to follow the electrical code, of course.
Which has changed quite a bit lately.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that part.
I was saying it appears that the electrical code has changed quite a bit as far as requirements for ground fault and certain types of things like that.
Yeah, and that's good because, you know, if you keep up with it and you involve the local electrical inspector with you, I mean, they're very helpful. They really are. The only key to it is you just can't turn around and sell it. I think the limit is still like 2 years, within 2 years, because then you're acting like a general contractor.
Oh, okay. No
selling.
Problem with that. Okay.
Okay. So, but yeah, bring the electrical inspector in right from the beginning and let them know you're going to be doing it and invite them. Say, hey, anytime you want to stop over and take a look, you know, like the one here in Fort Dodge, oh, yeah, he's great with that. I mean, you get a real education on how to do it correctly.
Excellent.
Yeah, they're great resources.
Thank you. Could you recommend any resource as far as online or publication, perhaps, as far as how to do it right these days?
Well, there's quite a few books and sites. I would, you know, what I usually Google is just the International Wiring Code. I would just Google something like that, or wiring for. Well, there is that one site, Wiring for Dummies, which really sounds horrible.
No,
you know, who would ever want that person to wire for you? But, you know, I would call the electrical inspector first and ask what resources they want you to use.
Oh, okay.
Because then that'll, you know, because if you just go out to some big box store and you do that, you know, you buy a, you know, kind of just a run-of-the-mill wiring, well, it may not match what he wants you to do.
Yeah.
And because, you know, they're ultimately responsible for life and safety, and you want to make sure you do exactly what that code official says.
Well, very good. I certainly appreciate your experience and expertise. Thanks for your help today.
All right, Paul.
Well, thanks. Did you hear
a
that,
lot.
Charity?
I heard it. I'm writing it down. Thanks a lot for your call, Paul. And you still have time to get in with your questions. We've got a couple of lines open for you at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Cecilia is on the line next from Anamosa. Hello, Cecilia.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I have two spigots on the outside of my house, and I've always just unplugged the hose and put it away for the winter and left the spigots open. And I read in a magazine that said you should cover them with a baggie and then duct tape it. So
okay.
That's my question.
What do you think, Bill?
Well, I think the only reason they're doing that is if you leave it open, they don't want the cold air going back in farther and causing condensation.
Okay.
Is probably the reason I've never done that myself. If the spigot is fairly new, you know, the actual mechanism that shuts the water off and everything is a long ways back. You know, there may be a foot to 14 inches long, these mechanisms. So it isn't going to hurt as long as you've got it, you know, taken care of. But cosmetically, if it doesn't bother you, that's not going to hurt anything.
All righty. Thank you very much.
All right.
All right, Cecilia, thanks a lot for your call again. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Other than changing the filter in your furnace, is there anything that you need to be thinking about right now to make sure that it's in proper working condition?
Well, you know, I think the biggest thing is if you haven't had it, checked and tuned and looked at in the last couple of years, I'd have somebody come in, you know, a certified heating and cooling person to come in and really go around and clean your registers, pull them up maybe if you can just pull them out of the floor and vacuum down inside of those to get any other dust or residue and all the toys and pencils and pens that, you know, fall down in there. Make sure that your drapes at night, you may want to pull them, open them up a little bit. A lot of people like to have those closed, but, you know, when it starts getting cold out, it doesn't matter what kind of heating and cooling system you have. If you have a heavy insulated drape and it's covering your window, you're going to have moisture in there. Make sure that your filter is geared for that system that you have. If you go down in the basement and you hear the furnace running and you hear kind of a whining, squeaking noise, you know, like some, you know, something getting choked off that is just trying to get air, then your filter is either too dirty or it's too restrictive. You know, some of the filters that we've been putting in, you know, we look at mold spores and dust mite stuff and all this, you know. Well, when they hold back and they can catch so many small things, then they don't let enough air through, and then the furnace is starved for air to work correctly. So, I would really look at getting the right one. That's why you'd want to ask your heating and cooling person, hey, you know, this particular furnace, what filter is made for this furnace? Not, you know, because all the equipment's different. They're all sized different. Which one is going to work for this furnace? And come up with some sort of a program, either have a chart down on the furnace or into the room, mechanical room, you know, that every time you walk by there, it reminds you that, hey, this is the last time I replaced that filter. Or if, you know, you've got a computer, have, you know, say a pirate come up screaming, you know, I'm starved for air or something, I don't know, but something on there that reminds you that I've got to get that furnace filter changed.
All right. We've got a bunch of callers on the line now. Kent is calling from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Kent. Hi, Kent. What's your question?
Hi, I was listening in, and you mentioned the knob and tube wiring just a little while ago, and you kind of perked up my ears a little bit. I poked my head up into my attic. It's an older home. It's pushing 100 years now, and I know there's some knob and tube wiring up there. I know it's live, and I know some insulation is running across those wires. Some of it's cut away from the wires. Most of it is across it.
Yep.
How much of a concern is that? You didn't really talk about what the dangers are with that, and I'm kind of curious now.
Well, a long time ago, we didn't think there was any concern. You know, we'd always throw insulation across it. Well, it has to be able to stay cool. And you know, I've seen some of the wiring. Some of the inspectors have showed me, you know, pictures and that of where it gets so hot it starts to melt. You know, it's very safe wiring, but you know, if it's very accessible, you know, I would. You know, what some people are doing is they're making like sheetrock or a drywall, you know, gypsum board enclosures, you know, staying at least 2 inches away from the wiring and kind of making these little boxes and then, you know, over the wiring to keep the insulation away.
Okay. I see most of it is strung up to the roof.
You're okay there.
It dips down in, and I noticed that some of it was cut away from the ceramic. I assume that's the knobs there. Some of it's cut away from that, a good 5 inches away. Maybe that's intended to keep it cool enough.
It may be, yeah, as long as it's just not in contact, because, you know, it brings up a lot of concerns for people insulating their older homes. If they have active knob and tube wiring inside the walls, well, how can you just, like, blow insulation in there without it touching? So, you know, people are going to have to, you know, think, okay, is this the time now I need to rewire those walls, which, you know, it's probably a good thing anyway, but... Or how am I going to keep the insulation away? It's darn near impossible if you're, you know, retrofitting sometimes. But, yeah, you know, if it's not touching the insulation, you're good. If the insulation is touching it, then it's bad.
All right, I think we have time for one more question. Dee Dee's on the line. Hi, Dee Dee.
Yes.
What's your question?
Yes. We have a 1976 ranch-style home. We put new replacement windows in 5 years ago. They're Anderson replacement windows.
Okay.
And we still get an awful lot of condensation. We live out in the country, and we're up on top of a hill, which we get a lot of cold out here. Just wanting to know why we still get so much condensation with these new windows.
Do you know what the relative humidity is inside your house? Do you have a humidifier
in
the winter?
Yes, we do have. I'm anywhere between usually around 45% to 50%.
Okay, when it gets colder, so, you know, I mean, Anderson's is an excellent window,
mm-hmm.
But that glass can only do so much. And you know, the thing is, we've got to remember, if the relative humidity is, say, in the middle of your room is reading, let's say, 50,
mm-hmm.
if you move that right next to the glass, you're going to see that just charges up maybe to 70 to 75%.
Sure.
Because right next to that window, it's cooler.
Right.
And so... you may have to, in the winter, you know, you may have to drop that relative humidity down inside your house, down into the, you know, the 30s.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, it all comes back to what you feel the most comfortable with and the healthiest. You know, with some people, they have to have humidity higher levels to be
sure.
healthier and feel more comfortable, and then they have to live with a little bit of condensation.
Sure.
At least with the Anderson, because they're vinyl.
Uh-huh.
Bad, aren't they? So
right.
at least you can clean those. But, you know, I'd try and drop it down. If you have a humidifier, start cutting it down a little bit. Drop it down to where it's like, say, 35 to 40 and see if that affects a lot. Leave the windows open a little bit more so you can get more air wash across.
Yeah, we have done that. We've also thought about putting an air exchanger in. Would that help?
Oh, I'm a big proponent. We don't build a house without them. Put a heat recovery ventilator system in or an energy recovery ventilator, right.
All right, Dee Dee, thank
They're
you
excellent.
So much for your call. And we're out of time. Bill McAnally, thank you.
Hey, thanks, Charity.
Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. I hope you'll come back next month.
Oh, I will.
Okay,
thank
excellent.
You.
Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Caitlin Fry. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. You can send us email anytime. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, we'll find out why farmers might want to think about adding another crop or two into their corn-soybean rotation. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.